Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. We've got an important show for you today here at Eat Drink Indie Radio, one that focuses on some issues facing the food world that have to be addressed. Issues concerning restaurant culture, sexual harassment, and how to change an environment that is often hostile, demeaning, and damaging. With high-profile chefs such as John Besh and Mario Batali stepping away from their restaurants and other businesses because of sexual misconduct, and with the national press reevaluating the notion of the bad boy or rock star chef, I wanted to talk with some local restaurateurs who have taken a tough line against an abusive kitchen culture. We'll be talking today with Martha Hoover of Patachou, Inc., whose efforts to create a radically different, radically better company extend to how she expects her restaurant kitchens to operate as well. We'll hear about how she launched her restaurant empire 28 years ago and get her thoughts on the sexual abuse issues facing the restaurant industry. We'll also talk with Kate Drury, whose company now includes not only the Flying Cupcake and Dancing Donut bakeries in the Indianapolis area, but also the Lemon Bar restaurant in Zionsville. We'll hear how she's handled sexual harassment in her kitchens, and we'll also talk with the two young chefs who head up her Lemon Bar kitchen, Carol Aiken and Lainey Glick, and get their perspectives as well. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are talking today here on Eat Drink Indie Radio about the sexual harassment issues facing the restaurant industry and how some local restaurateurs are creating a better kitchen culture. Martha Hoover launched her restaurant empire 28 years ago with the first Cafe Patachou at 49th and Pennsylvania Streets in Indianapolis, and has grown Patachou, Inc. to now encompass multiple locations of Cafe Patachou, plus Petite Chou, Napoli's artisan pizzerias, Public Greens, which supports Hoover's Patachou Foundation, as well as Bar 114 and the recently opened Crispy Bird. She's been a James Beard Foundation semifinalist in the national category of Outstanding Restaurateur and has been increasingly involved in the national conversation about the restaurant industry. I talked with Martha about her focus on local food that goes back to the beginning, how she launched Cafe Patachou, and how she created a company that she would want to work for. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the origin of Patachou. 28 years ago this month, I think, right? December 1989?
1989,
yep. Oh my goodness. So what were you thinking then about local food?
Well, actually, I was thinking a lot then about local food because my whole goal of opening my own restaurant was to open something in my neighborhood where I could take my own children to eat. And the problem I had was I shopped locally. I was a big farm market, went out to the country. My husband's from southern Indiana. We know a lot of farmers. I was always getting all the local stuff. It wasn't in the vernacular then. We didn't talk about anything being farmed to anything.
Exactly.
But that was how I preferred to cook and preferred to eat. There was nothing in the community at all that appealed to me and that offered the kind of food that I would feed my children, my family, and the guests in my home. And I had been interested in food since I was a young girl. Took a lengthy trip to France when I was 17.
Did that sort of shape your perspective on food?
It certainly added to my perspective. I had a very a father who considered himself a gourmand, and he was a New Yorker. So we went to New York a lot and ate just, you know, a variety. It's not that it was all exquisite food or fancy food, but it was this insanely diverse type of food, type of cuisines we were eating. So after spending, my whole point being that I was introduced to a variety of really good food from a young age, and I was very interested. You know, I came up with Julia Child and Craig Claiborne and of course James Beard, and those were the people that I read and watched on public television. So they were very influential on my attitude towards food. But there was nothing that served the quality of food that I wanted to serve, that I was serving at home. So I just thought, no one's doing it, I'll do it. And I was able to lease property at 49th and Penn. I was actually Potter Shoe. The original Potter Shoe was actually the first new tenant since 1942.
Oh, my goodness.
In Meridian Kessler. So that just shows you where we were in 1989.
Oh, my goodness. Now, some might think it was a little unusual for you to decide that you were going to start a restaurant yourself in 1989, as your professional background was in law.
And yeah, so it's true. I had no professional experience as a restaurateur. I opened up my first restaurant having never worked in a restaurant.
So you didn't wait tables as a kid or work in a pizza
place? I never
worked
in a restaurant in any position. I can't lie. I never did. Was not a trained professional. My experience was in the law. But in fact, in retrospect, I think that's probably what allowed me to do precisely what we were doing then and what we're doing now. Still, it allowed me to really create my own company without having to be in the image of something else.
Now, did your customers kind of catch up with you? It seems like that they have come along with you over the years and embraced what you liked and what you wanted to serve and what you like to eat.
Well, I think that's a lovely way of saying it. I always had from day one remarkable customer support. And there's certainly one of the things that I think really helped Potter Shoe be so successful from day one was the fact that I never saw myself as being more knowledgeable, better than, different than my customers. In fact, just the opposite. And I've always stated that I thought if this was something I wanted, I knew that I was not a remarkably unique person. So I assumed that there were lots of other people in the community who wanted the same thing.
Now, someone recently remarked to me that you played the long game, growing very gradually over the years.
That was quite intentional. I am a huge believer in slow, smart, strategic growth. I think that you have to, especially in restaurants, there are a lot of variables that you really can't control. So you need to be as stable as possible before you expand. That's just my opinion. Obviously, today people expand at what I think is lightning pace.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'd rather be a heritage brand. It was always my idea to be around for a long time than to be in and out.
So has your perspective changed as Potter Shoe Inc. has grown? I read a quote from you recently that you said early on that you didn't tell your story well, maybe.
Well, Potter Shoe is a very distinctive company, and we have always been very bar-setting in the fact that we have, in fact, we trademarked something that we used internally to describe ourselves, and that is that we are radically different and radically better. And that's something that has been part of our DNA. And, you know, if it's part of your DNA, it's really hard to shake, right? So we're very proud of the fact that we started out being radically different and radically better, and that we have continued using that as an internal mantra that has really guided us.
So as you have grown, you have started getting more and more attention. Are you, you know, more comfortable with telling the story and getting it out there?
I'm incredibly comfortable with telling the story. I think it's a story that is potentially inspiring, particularly to other women who are starting off in any industry.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's not that I was hesitant to tell the story because I didn't know the story or I was embarrassed of the story. There was nothing like that. Just the story was not something that I thought was, I didn't think that there was a point in me having to brag, so to speak, about what we were. I thought the proof was in the pudding, actually. It's like, come in,
sure,
you'll see
right.
what we are. So we say we're a bar-setting company. We say we source food differently. We say we have a different customer experience, that we treat staff differently, that we are, you know, we say all these things about the company. Well, the things that we say today about the company are not only true today, but they were also true in 1989. So we have been very proud of that. But truly, the culture didn't care about a lot of that stuff.
That's a very good point.
And so there was no sense in saying it when people were not really
right.
interested in hearing it. They still supported us. They still came in. But maybe it wasn't as much interest to them in 1994 that we were doing certain things for our staff and being, really giving opportunities for our staff and treating our staff a certain way. Certainly, that was very different than what was norm in 1994, as example,
right.
In the restaurant industry. And still, today is quite not the norm. But today, people are interested in it because today, especially, I think, with a younger audience, a millennial-based audience, people want to support companies whose values reflect their own.
Now, tell me a little bit about some of those ways the company is different, especially in how it treats its employees.
Well, we concentrate on five distinct areas that these are the areas that we all of our decision making is guided towards how our decisions impact one of five areas. And the first area is our food sourcing. Second area is our customer experience. Third area is our leadership opportunities for staff. And I think that's what you were asking about. The fourth area is our commitment to sustainability. And our fifth area is our commitment to our community. We offer our staff first and foremost a remarkably stable organization and an organization that is very well-versed on how to establish expectations and also how, which people want. They want to know when they work for you what's expected out
sure.
of them. They also want to know what their path is, what their path to success is, and what their long-term involvement can be. You know, anymore, one of the benefits of having food be such an incredible part of the culture right now is that people want to be in food. It is no longer a default profession. People are deciding very purposely that they want to be in food, but they want to know what the road is for them in food and how they can have a life and lead a life, not just talking about work-life balance, but also how they can have a life that affords them flexibility and time for family, time to travel, career advancement, you know, education. All those things factor in to what people want in a job. And you have to be able to tell people that.
Well, now, those sorts of things haven't traditionally been really a part of the restaurant business.
They have not been a part of it at all.
So how did you make that a part of it? Because we hear so much about the negatives in the restaurant industry as being, oh, that's just the way it is.
Well, I've never said that. If I ever heard that in my midst, I would have to disagree with that strongly. I think, and obviously just the way we started, how I started the company, coming to it with totally fresh eyes and fresh senses meant that I could create the company that I wanted to work for. And I go back to that feeling that I wasn't remarkably unique. So if I wanted to work for a company that espoused certain values, that I thought that other people would want to work for the company as well.
We've been talking with restaurateur Martha Hoover of Potashoe Inc. We'll be right back with more from Martha here on Eat, Drink, and D Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. The sexual misconduct allegations facing the restaurant industry have hit some of the biggest names, Mario Batali, John Besh, and others in a business often known for bad boy personas and a culture of excess. But for restaurateurs like Martha Hoover of Potashoe Inc. in Indianapolis, it doesn't have to be that way. She tells us why she's appalled, but not surprised, about the recent news of high-profile chefs and about the high expectations she has for her kitchens and her company.
We are a norm-busting company in, I think, whatever the metrics is that you are using to compare restaurants. We are we're a very different company, and we have been since day one. And as a result of being norm busting, we have avoided all the traps of what I call bro kitchen culture.
Exactly. Now, how do you do that? Because again, we keep hearing it's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. Get used to it. You know, that's how kitchens have been. You know, grow a thicker skin, you know, put up with it, that kind of stuff.
Well, I think if that's the way you rationalize or justify behavior and abuses in any system, whether it's a restaurant or a company or, you know, a personal relationship, I think if that's your okay justification, then you probably wouldn't be a good fit in my company. because we don't justify. That, to me, leads to the most mediocre behavior and allows for zero improvement and zero moving forward. And I'm a huge proponent of moving forward and improving every day, whatever it is. So I think that statement, this is just how it is quite honestly not good enough as a justification, because it's wrong. If that's how the behavior in a kitchen is, or a company, or a personal relationship, then I say make changes.
Well, now, how do you make those changes? And what sort of changes did you start out with?
I didn't have to make changes.
Well, that's true, you started from scratch, right?
Because I started from scratch doing it in a manner that was... let's face it, I'm female, and most of my executive team, of my five people on the executive team, we only have one male. We are a fiercely, fiercely forward female thinking group of restaurants, which means that we just do things a little differently. But we expect the men in our organization to understand we expect them to understand what's required of them to succeed in our business. And what's required is for them to not bring the biases that sometimes the outside world allows them to think with. We try to be as bias neutral and as gender neutral as possible in the way we run our organization. And perhaps it came about very organically because I'm a woman and I'm in charge. You tend to hire in your own image, I think. So I hired a lot of very strong, opinionated, independent thinking women, gave them opportunities that they did not have working in more traditional restaurants. And they have succeeded and grown with us over the years, which I'm extraordinarily proud of. And we gave advancement opportunities to people regardless of their gender or their orientation or their, any other metrics that you would use to either hold people back or to push them forward.
So describe the kitchen environment at a Patachou Inc. restaurant.
You know, two things that are really detrimental to any restaurant, in my opinion, are chaos and waste. And so we are huge believers in systems, and we're huge believers in expecting respect at all levels. So the kitchen culture that you just described to me is a very chaotic kitchen culture that may look good in a movie or read well at night in a book.
Right.
10 years ago or 15 years ago, but one that I think if you've ever been in a truly professionally run restaurant, wherever in the world, a 3-star or 2-star restaurant, 1-star restaurant, what you would find is a remarkable amount of calm, a real adherence to systems, and a insane attitude of respect towards all workers. I've always said that the most important person in our building is the dishwasher. And people laugh and think it's because I don't want to wash dishes. That's not the reason.
Right.
It's because the dishwasher, if treated properly and if allowed to communicate to anyone else in the building, will tell you some of the most valuable information that will lead to sustainability in a business. I'm talking about financial sustainability. They understand waste more than anybody. And
sure,
I think that the better you are at controlling waste, the better you are at running your business. Restaurants are, at the end of the day, a business. So you cannot approach them with a non-business-like attitude and expect to succeed for 20 or 30 years. That's just not going to happen.
So what's your take on what will be perhaps the fallout from these high-profile chefs having to step away from their businesses or, you know, being booted out of the kitchens because of some of these harassment allegations and misconduct issues?
Well, just like I think everybody else today, I'm extraordinarily appalled by the behavior. But unlike a lot of people, I'm not surprised at all by the allegations because I think it's so endemic. That behavior is so endemic in structures that are, I don't want to say male-led, but that are, because I don't, there are plenty of examples of restaurants owned and operated by men where none of this abuse occurs.
Of course.
And I think that's critically important. I also think it's really important as we dig down into this subject to not treat everybody in the same with the same paintbrush. I read a lot last week about April Bloomfield and the vilifying that is occurring around her and
because of her business partners,
her business
alleged actions,
her business partners. Admitted actions. He not alleged. Well, I mean, he admitted to them and he stepped down. So those aren't alleged. Those are admitted. And she admitted to turning a blind eye and not supporting her staff, whether they were female or male. She did not matter. She did not support her staff. And I think that as a leader of an organization, one of your primary job is to support your staff. So she failed terribly in that regard. And she is being vilified for that. What I really think needs to be underlined is that in the Mario Batali case, his partner, Joe Bastianich, is not being vilified the way that April Bloomfield is being vilified.
John Besh
in New Orleans, his partners, all of whom are male, are not being vilified.
Heard anything, right?
And I think that's really critical to note that you can't just vilify April because she's a female and you expected more out of her. I think you can say to all of these partners, you guys failed. You failed your organizations. You can serve the most innovative food in the most innovative environment. Let's just pretend for a minute that the food being served in these restaurants is remarkable, amazing food, or incredibly innovative. That, to me, is not good enough. I want more out of my restaurants. Restaurants are true representative organizations of communities, and I want restaurants to be more mindful. I want restaurant owners to be more mindful that they have a duty, and that the duty, if it's executed properly, will inure to the success of the business. So I think that leaders, whether it's a chef owner, a owner manager, whoever is leading a restaurant, has a duty to the organization. And part of that duty is to treat staff with respect and to create environments of respect. And I think that creates less turnover, happier employees, more productive staff, happier customers because the experience is nicer. I think if you get rid of your toxic cultures, then what's left is really positive stuff. So to me, it just makes sense. I don't think there's like a checklist that you put in place. I think it starts at the top.
Do we think we hold female owners, chefs, and that sort of thing to a higher standard?
Well, certainly with my example of April Bloomfield,
sure.
I think we have held her to a higher standard. And believe me, I think it's really awful how she treated her employees. But I think that there's plenty of guilt to go around in a lot of these big restaurant groups, especially the restaurant groups that were at the top of the food pyramid, if you don't mind me saying that. you know, they could have done better. They could have been more innovative business owners as well and done more for their staff.
Can we separate the art from the artist, as we've discussed, you know, that kind of ideas in other categories in film and that sort of thing? Can we separate the food from the chef?
I think that's a personal decision. And I was asked that the other day on NPR. And my answer, I related it to a company I admire a lot, Patagonia, another completely bar-setting company that truly has, since its beginning, been radically different and radically better in almost any way I could measure a company by. The owner, founder, is a remarkable person. And they tell you when you buy the product, you know what you're buying. You're buying a very value-based company. But if I found out that much of that, what they say they are, if I found out that that was a fraud, a lie, that it was not authentic, I would no longer support Patagonia. So by extrapolation, I just believe that regarding restaurants too. Restaurants are, you know, they're lucky in many ways. If the food's good, people come. And that's really great. I think this all comes down to personal choice. Everybody as a consumer has a limited amount of money that they spend on food or on restaurant going. And I think it's up to them to decide, up to the market to decide whether or not they will support companies like The Spotted Pig, April Bloomfield's company, or John Besh's restaurants in New Orleans, Mario Batali's restaurants. I mean, that's up to the market to decide. I don't think I could weigh in. I could tell you that I would be very reluctant to support organizations like that, knowing how they don't support their staffs, and knowing the abuse that the staffs have endured over the years, unless I would see real change in those organizations.
Does this all have any effect on Panashu Inc. and what you do and how you and your company are striving to be better?
Well, the effect actually is quite positive. It's that our path that we started on in 1989 had meaning and purpose, and that it was the right way for us to operate. So we don't have to make corrections. And there's something really nice about being ahead of curves instead of being right behind them or in the middle. And we feel very much culturally ahead of this curve.
We've been talking with restaurateur Martha Hoover of Potashoe Inc. For more information on her restaurants, go to potashoeinc.com. Jolene Katzenberger, and we are back here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, talking today about the issue of sexual harassment. And many of those in the restaurant industry have experienced some sort of harassment, and that includes entrepreneurs like Kate Drury, whose growing company includes the Flying Cupcake Bakeries in Indianapolis, Carmel, Greenwood, and Fishers, the Dancing Donut at 54th and the Monon, and now the Lemon Bar Restaurant in Zionsville. I talked with Kate about how she launched the business, the kitchen culture she's tried to create, and how sexual harassment has affected her and her family as well.
How did it start?
Back in 2007, I had a women's clothing boutique, and I would make cupcakes for the open houses and things that we did there, and people seemed to really like it. I know it's a very simplistic way I started, but it kind of started my mind thinking, well, what if this could be a business? And during 06 and 07, I traveled a lot for the boutique. It was still a little bit before a lot of the stuff happened online when you're buying for your boutique or what have you. Mm-hmm. And I went to New York and I saw Magnolia.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and right. I waited in line too.
Did you?
I did. And it was like 10 at night, which is very exciting from being from Indianapolis. And you could get two. I think they had like a limit, which I thought was what? Like, how is that even possible? It must be good. And they were good, but I felt like mine were good too. That's kind of how I felt. I want to say they were better. But so that sort of planted the seed, and I started looking for locations. And found the one in Butler Tarkington.
Right.
And the landlord, he really wanted ice cream in there. So it was. I had to, like, convince him. The idea of a cupcake shop, while now is so common, it was so foreign even then.
Goodness.
So foreign. I had the bank. I had a hard time getting any funding. Well, I didn't. I ended up having to mortgage my house. But just trying to convince anybody of this, like, concept, because even Magnolia wasn't just cupcakes. They were, like, a bakery.
Right.
So that whole concept seemed to be confusing to people. So when we opened in 07, it was an interesting first few months. I was initially I hired someone to do the baking, and I developed a lot of the recipes and then wanted them to execute it, but that didn't work out.
Oh my goodness.
It just wasn't working out, and so I ended up, like, out the way. Let me just do this. I'll just do it myself, which I think really provided me with a good foundation forward for these businesses. It gives me, like, a little more confidence, because I don't bake anymore. I could. I don't think anybody in the kitchen would want me in there, but I could do it because I did do it for almost 2 solid years.
Well, now that was a very difficult time to be starting a business.
It was.
Right?
Well, it was 07, and so when everything crashed, it was. I was already open, and I was actually in negotiations for a second location in Carmel then.
Oh, my gosh.
And that the bank pulled the approval. That's next summer. So we didn't grow. It wasn't till, I think it was 09 or 10, till I opened the second location at Mass Ave.
Right.
So I went a completely different direction, a much smaller space, pretty reasonable rent. And that's how, that was my second location. And then I kind of did, we outgrew Illinois Street.
Sure.
The facilities for baking, and then hence the large kitchen that we have in Carmel, which is our commissary kitchen. And that was, like, a very big step. Didn't even understand the concept that a landlord might pay for your build out. I actually had foolishly paid for my first one, and I kind of laugh about it now. But so it was a huge learning experience to prepare and go through the build out for the Carmel one, and then hire it in and have everything moved over there.
Oh my goodness.
And then from then it just kind of grew. We just would, like, hear what customers would say, where they would maybe want another location, and
went from there.
Yeah, that's how, that just kept adding things.
Greenwood
I was 82nd, then Greenwood,
right.
Then
the donut,
then Fisher's.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, wanted to talk about the dancing donut. Why another concept?
Well, like anyone else, I get bored too. And, you know, it is. It's like anything else. Like every single person you know who, with their own job, wants new challenges. And
sure.
That is, I am the same way. And that was what the donut was about. And I really wanted donuts made from scratch. I do like donuts, but I don't like donuts. I'm going to just say it. I don't like large chain donuts. I just don't. I never have. I'm not a huge Dunkin' Donut person.
Right.
I just don't like them. There's something about, like, the taste or the aftertaste, and I wanted to see what it would look like in a landscape of doing it all from scratch. And that is, like, I look at it almost like it's like a Broadway play every night. Those bakers come in at like 9 or 10 every night, and they produce, they're working on it, they hand mix it. They have a mixer, but it's like all done by hand. Roll it, cut it, they hand cut it. It's all done that way. All from scratch, and then we open at 7. So it's
with the donuts on display. Right?
With the donuts on display for the big show. It's the same thing every night. So.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that idea. What a cool comparison. Now, what about the Lemon Bar in Zionsville? That's something different.
Completely.
From the other shops.
Yeah. So again, good old Kate gets bored. So I thought, I really love Zionsville. We had had the donuts set up at the farmer's market. Zionsville has a really strong community feel where they're very supportive of their own businesses. Not every area is like that. Certain areas I have found, at least in my experience, are more supportive than others. So from a business perspective, I thought something could succeed there. What? I had to kind of think that through. They have some really nice bakeries there already.
Sure.
So I wanted to bring that element in, but I definitely wanted to add food. And we have so many skilled and talented bakers that have gone to culinary school that work for us anyway, that dialogue happened with one in particular that's sitting here. And from there, the concept grew and the menu kept evolving. And the next thing I knew, I woke up one day and I'm like, huh, I feel like I own a restaurant. So that's kind of how it all played out. And I really, really love it. It's still very challenging, but I'm not bored at all yet.
Well, now, we've been hearing a lot about the culture of kitchens these days, and, you know, high-profile chefs stepping away from their businesses over sexual misconduct allegations. You know, probably not surprising considering the typical kitchen culture. So tell me a little bit about the culture in your kitchens, and what's your experience been?
Well, largely in my kitchens, it's been positive. We have had, it has crept in, but the concept of it being, like, in my mind, just for my own kitchens and how I run them, it being something that women maybe have to feel very, or anyone, I guess, who's being harassed on a daily basis is slightly foreign to me. When the few times the problem has arisen, it's been brought to my attention, I usually deal with it very zero tolerance, in a zero tolerance level. You know, I'll bring the other people in, I will discuss it, but at the end of the day, there is no way that even I'm going to be uncomfortable in my own kitchen. Like, that's how I feel about it. And I would expect no less from anyone working there.
Well, now, you mentioned that your daughter had an experience.
Yes, that was at one of the locations. She was only 15 at the time, which is just, it's shocking to me. I was stunned. It's shocking that somebody would do it to the boss's daughter and then also being her age. And it was extremely egregious. It was not even subtle. Not that that should excuse it, but there was no gray area with what had happened. And that person was terminated immediately.
And that has been sort of a guiding principle, what you said, you know, with the zero tolerance.
Yes, that, I mean, because that's now in my own home and upset her. I hated the idea that I'm trying to teach my girls, you know, about you can do anything you want as a woman. You can set your own goals and succeed in whatever capacity and whatever definition that is to you. And then here's my own daughter, and she actually hadn't said anything to me. It had happened multiple times because in her mind, I don't think she also was young. Sure. I'm not sure she thought it was necessarily something she wasn't supposed to just deal with. So she almost, the day that she actually told my husband, she had come home from work and was crying. Oh. And he had to sort of pry it out of her. She was embarrassed. She was, I think, ashamed. And it was so awful. I was at work that day when he called to tell me, and I was like, what? Like, in my own kitchen, it was just very eye-opening. That was about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely take anything that comes to me very seriously from any employee of mine in that department.
Now, it's not the sort of, that's just the way kitchens are kind of attitude.
No. Mm-hmm. That's crazy to me. Like, you know, I worked in plenty of kitchens at plenty of jobs in the 80s and 90s. Yeah, I thought that too. I mean, that I absolutely was harassed, shockingly. Like,
really?
At places, even my first job was Burger King. The thing, and I was 14 then, I had to have a work permit. The things that were said to me, now I look back, I'm like, I didn't even know what some of the things were that were being said to me.
Oh, my goodness.
It was that, like, in your face. And it was just the way it was. I mean, and I would hate to think that's the way it still is. Like, how can that be?
We've been talking with Kate Drury of the Flying Cupcake, the Dancing Donut, and the Lemon Bar Restaurant. We'll be right back with more from Kate and Lemon Bar chefs Carol Aiken and Lainey Glick here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Industry remains a tough business. There are plenty of challenges and lots of hard work, and unfortunately, a sometimes hostile and harassing work environment. But it doesn't have to be that way. Young chefs like Lainey Glick and Carol Aiken of the Lemon Bar Restaurant in Zionsville and owner Kate Drury are working to create a better environment for themselves and their employees. Lainey tells us about some of her kitchen experiences in the past, and she and Carol explain how they're working to create a different environment in their kitchen.
Well, Carol and Lainey, talk a little bit about your experiences as young women chefs in the business.
Women are meant to be put down in the kitchen, and that's how it feels a lot of the time, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, I've worked in kitchens. I've worked in Kate's kitchens, and I've never felt that way there. And there have been other situations where I have totally felt safe and not had to worry about it. But, you know, I've started jobs where my manager has harassed me, and, you know, it'll be my first week, and I'm 20 years old. What do I do? You don't know what to do when you're 20 years old and your manager's harassing you. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of keep quiet. What do you do at that point, you know?
That's what Kate was saying, that, you know, you're just supposed to deal with it somehow. Mm-hmm.
And as you get older, you know, now if someone harassed me, they would really regret it. But, like, it's especially these young women, like, trying to get into this industry, they're really made to feel like they don't belong in the industry, you know?
Now, what's your experience has been, Carol, in the same sort of topic?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've worked in a lot of different types of kitchens in a lot of different capacities. So I've worked for some really great chefs, both men and women, and that have been very supportive and nothing but. But then I've also worked for men and women who have been, you know, who have harassed me and said things. And it's kind of been the attitude for a long time, I think, of you just kind of just deal with it. And even in culinary school, I was just kind of taught by a woman chef that this is a man's world and you have to kind of just play by their rules.
In culinary school?
In culinary school, yeah. As you know, I mean, I was 18 at the time. So just kind of learning that attitude and to just kind of deal with it. But again, like, as, you know, our culture kind of changes and shifts more, it's like, no, I don't have to just deal with this, you know, and I can be part of that change. And we can help
the whole industry grow,
yeah,
by having a kitchen that provides a safe environment for anyone, for men or women. Like, I want people to come in and, like, be passionate about what they're doing, because that's, like, what drives this industry is, like, so much passion. And it diminishes a lot of women and deters them from getting into the industry, mm-hmm, when, you know, they show up, you know, and they're 20 and someone's like, I'm going to touch you in ways you don't want to be touched. I'm going to talk to you in ways you don't want to be talked to.
So is change possible? I think we're going through this moment right now in the food industry where we're looking at what's going on with a sharper focus, perhaps, in the past. Can it change?
I hope so.
I hope so.
That's all. I mean, we're doing our best.
Yeah, and I think that, like, you know, just this, like, just even talking about it, but even, like, you know, Lainey and I kind of being, you know, the leaders in the kitchen, and we have men working for us and that respect us, but we also kind of give them respect too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a back and forth for sure.
Absolutely. So I think if the more people are willing to talk about it and be open about it, that I think the shift can be positive. Like, I don't know how long that will take, probably longer than I would hope. But I do think we are kind of shifting. The more that things are coming about and the more people are talking about it, I think the shift is kind of shifting.
It's just making the public eye, like, more aware of what's going on, and, like, I guess making people, even the people who are committing, like, these acts, like, more uncomfortable with what they're doing, you would hope. Mm-hmm. Like, just talking about it and hearing how women feel about the treatment, you know, and realizing that women have just as much place in these kitchens, and having, like, women chefs helps with that too. Having women business owners has helped with that.
And women owners.
I think owners and investors need to be more involved to know what's going on in the kitchens. And yes, the profit is of paramount importance, but if your kitchen's unhappy and these things are going on, it's all going to come out in the wash.
Are there certain things that can be done from an owner's perspective, you know, for setting the tone, you know, as far as, you know, sort of the trickle-down kind of idea of what's expected in a kitchen?
Well, I mean, first of all, you should definitely have a sexual harassment policy, which we do. It's in our manual. It's zero tolerance. And you need to actually apply it. You need to have an open door with your employees so that they can come to you and not feel like there's going to be retaliation, which, again, would go to the sexual harassment policy, or that you would even necessarily, in that situation, mention them by name, which there have been even issues in our kitchens that haven't had anything to do necessarily with sexual harassment or just maybe some other issue that I've had to approach in a way that I don't want to throw someone under the bus, because there might be other people that you don't realize are aware of it and not saying anything, and they may have an opinion, and it just all spreads like a cancer in the kitchen. And like I said from the beginning, is I my threshold is if you feel uncomfortable in the kitchen. Like, and if that's starting to happen, I absolutely will step in, or my GM will step in. And I think it's very important that you know what's going on and you take it seriously and you listen. And honestly, there are times I'm in the kitchen, and not just like at Lemon Bar per se, any of them, and I can tell if there's tension or something going on.
It's usually,
yeah. I mean, unless it's 3 a.m. when they're baking and they're quiet, I'm like, oh, it's 3 a.m. But if it's like 7 a.m. and they've all had coffee and they're, sometimes you can tell. And I don't just say it in front of everybody. I might check in, is what I call it. I'll check in with somebody later. I'll send them a text. Hey, call me when you get a second. And then check in and it's open. I just let them tell me what's going on. And if something like that is going on, I take it extremely serious.
Now, is that a change, Carol and Lainey, from your experiences in the past, that people perhaps not taking this sort of thing seriously?
Yeah, definitely, I think. And one thing, like, just even in this culture, like working, I know, with Kate, and I've worked with her, you know, on a fairly close basis being in management for the last few years, is that she does really care about her staff. And even though it is a small business, it's a large small business. I mean, it's spread out over so many locations. And I've worked in small business and large corporations, and I haven't really had a boss, like the owner of the company, who has invested that much in their staff and really does care about what's going on and what the issues are, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think definitely.
I think if someone had talked to me when I was 20 and explained to me their sexual harassment policy, I would have gotten through all of the stuff I've gotten through, been able to go to my boss and report it, and it probably would have been dealt with. I just didn't know how to deal with that. And Kate, you know, she has this policy laid out, and when you're hired, they discuss it. And it's crazy to me that all these places have sexual harassment policies, in quotations, but don't actually do anything to follow them, you know? You sign a paperwork, but, like, we're not going to...
Well, now, retaliation has been a big key in a lot of people not wanting to come forward and talk about these things and keeping it to themselves and, I'll just deal with it. Have you had any experiences, you know, in that? You know, is that still a prevalent concern in other kitchens?
I don't know if it's as prevalent as people make it up to be in their heads. I think that's a lot of the problem.
That it feels like someone's going to retaliate.
Yeah, you worry, like, for your job. You know, especially as I've been the only woman in so many kitchens. So, of course, you worry that if you report something, your coworkers are going to turn against you. And It shouldn't feel that way, but it does. So it's built up in your head that if you report it, then either your coworkers aren't going to like you anymore, or you might lose your job. And to be fair, I haven't done enough of, like, reporting harassment. I've talked about it, and it's more like, you're not going to harass me. But I think if I'd actually reported it, I don't know what would have happened. I would like to think they would have done something, but I think
you don't
it depends
know.
On the business I was in, too, you know? Like,
I even think, though, a little bit is, you know, being the only female in a kitchen sometimes, is anyone going to take me seriously?
Yes.
Is anyone going to, like,
for sure,
do
listen,
anything about this? Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's a huge problem. Like, that, I know that has to be, like, and as more people are coming about and saying things, and even with that, I think as more people are coming about and saying things, some people don't take that seriously.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
You know, and it's like, this has to be so hard for someone to have the courage to finally say, no, that's not okay, and you can't treat me that way.
And to be taken seriously.
And to be taken seriously.
Like, I'm almost surprised by what's been going on, and I hate to even admit that. I'm surprised, like, so these women are coming out of all these major players, mm-hmm. and someone's actually doing something about it, and that should say volumes, is that I'm so used to hearing it as, you know, buried story or... Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I know things.
Or accusing the woman
right,
at the time,
right.
too, you know? It's like, well, but what were you wearing?
Right,
like,
right, that it must
exactly.
have been your fault.
Yeah, and so, and then I think that's internalized in women, too. When you grow up hearing all of this, like, it makes you feel like, is it my fault in a way? Like, it's awful, but it's ingrained in you, and so you keep quiet when you should be able to talk openly about this.
So tell me a little bit about the culture in your kitchen. So you are both chefs at the Lemon Bar in Zionsville. Tell me what it's like as young women chefs here in the Indianapolis area.
Well, in our kitchen, I mean, it's pretty great, but we're working for a female owner, and we're working for a lot of, like, with a lot of females. So I don't know. Harassment's never been an issue with this company.
Right.
Like,
it's a very small kitchen.
It is a very small kitchen. There will be some booty bumps, but it's not to be taken too heavily. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think our kitchen's pretty... It's still got the same stress and like, aggravation that any kitchen has, but minus the other stressors that you don't need to deal with as a woman.
Well, and I think one of the keys that I've been hearing from you is respect.
Yeah.
You know, for your owner, the owner's respect for the employees, and your respect for your kitchen crew. That seems like that might be a key to addressing some
crazy
of these
concept.
Issues.
I definitely think so. You'd have empathy for the person if you know them. I mean, these
Treat
guys.
Treat them like a person.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And that's, I mean, that comes down to it a lot is women are often treated like foreigners in a kitchen. They're not treated like people, you know? And if people who were in these situations just respected each other and treated their, you know, coworkers as, like, fellow humans, I think we'd all be all right.
So the idea that this is just the way it is, this is kitchen culture, the macho pirate ship sort of culture, that's not the way it has to be then.
No. It's still very foreign to me, other than the few times it's crept inside one of my stores. I just don't see why it would even have to happen. That gets down to not only the culture, but the person. And if they're going to be that way, they're probably always going to be that way, whether you have a policy in place or not. So they probably just have no place. Certainly don't in my kitchens.
We've been talking with chefs Carol Aiken and Lainey Glick and owner Kate Drury of the Lemon Bar restaurant in Zionsville. For information on the restaurant, go to thelemonbaronline.com. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and thanks also to our guests. Martha Hoover, owner of Patachou Inc., which includes the cafes Patachou, Petite Chou, Nepalese, Public Greens, Bar 114, and the new Crispy Bird. Kate Drury, owner of the Flying Cupcake Bakeries, the Dancing Donut, and now the Lemon Bar Restaurant. And chefs Carol Aiken and Lainey Glick of the Lemon Bar in Zionsville. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie.